For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And sometimes applicants get caught up in the mindset that I have the best job, the best letters of recommendation, and that's enough, right? I'm going to get in. I found that that's not quite enough.
Why did I become an executive coach? I saw lots of great people fail to get ahead at work, while their much less talented peers blew right past them. That made me furious, but also curious. What were great people getting wrong? It came down to helping them re-examine what drove success and then helping them make critical shifts, one hard truth at a time.
Feel like you're doing everything you were told, but you're not moving ahead at work nor having the impact you seek? Then welcome to 97% Effective with Michael Winderoth, where we skip feel-good, happy talk and engage experts in pointed conversations about what it really takes to move the needle at work and your career. So if you feel stalled or frustrated, or seek that extra edge as you move to the next level, then look no further. This is the Hard Truths Playbook you never got.
Hi, I'm Michael Winderoth, and you're listening to 97% Effective. Every time I have an amazing guest on this show, I want to know their backstory of how they got to where they are, mainly who most inspired and helped them on their journey. So when I found out that two of my amazing guests, Sasha Kellerman at Leerink Partners and then David Harris at Vista Equity Partners, both raved about an institution called MLT, Management Leadership for Tomorrow, I asked them, who can I talk to there? David immediately said, Coach Candace. Enter my guest today, Candace Gonzalez-Toomey, senior coach and team lead at MLT, who helps great talent who come from underrepresented backgrounds get into the top business schools in the U.S. Now, coaches can be extremely humble, and yes, we as a profession are vehicles that support our clients. But I've got to say that David Harris, right off the bat, just gave Coach Candace massive credit for accelerating his path, recommended, introduced her right away, and that path took him to Stanford Business School and then into the elite world of investing. Conversation and the goal today is simple. Understand what Coach Candace does and does so well, helping candidates get into the most selective business schools in the world. What do they miss, candidates that is, or gets in their way? What do they really need to focus their energy on to navigate the process successfully? And my hope is that in discussing her coaching, we'll learn new insights and strategies on getting into any highly competitive environment, which is often a very critical first step you got to get in to accelerate that career journey. At MLT, Candace Gonzalez-Toomey has coached more than 200 applicants over the past 6 years, a whopping 40% of whom are at or graduated from the top three business schools in the U.S. She holds a PhD in social psychology from USC and prior to MLT spent 14 years in graduate and undergraduate admissions, so she's been on the other side of the fence, including at the Haas School of Business at Cal Berkeley as Associate Director of Admissions. Candace, excited, honored to have you on 97% Effective.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here, and I hope to be of service to your listeners.
Absolutely. I mentioned you have a PhD in social psychology, and that can take people on many different professional directions. For you, that took you to admissions officer at Haas and then to MLT. Take us through what brought you to coaching and MLT, and what brings you into work every day?
Thank you for asking. I'll share that my passion for education equity and my origin story altogether, it starts in Virginia, rural Virginia, driving through the tobacco fields with my grandmother, who drove really fast. And so I was white knuckle as she was driving through the tobacco fields. And I saw in the distance a beautiful white traditional Victorian home. And I commented on how beautiful it was. And my grandmother grew silent. And after a while, she told me that she had worked in that home for the family that lived there. And she had to quit school when she was in the eighth grade to support her family. So she had to go to work at the home. I knew she was an excellent student, that Latin was her favorite subject, but I had never heard the story. And prior to the story, I was an okay student. A's, B's, smattering of C's. Certainly unaware of my privilege of being born in the 60s and raised in a segregation-free, diverse, middle-class community. At that moment, I made a promise to myself that to honor her, I would value education and go as far as I could go with it. And then I made that same promise to my daughters. And I began taking classes in college admissions and volunteering and reading up on the field of college admissions. Then I had another aha moment when I met Maria, who was a high school junior from an under-resourced high school in Oakland. And I helped her with her essays. And something she told me I'll never forget. She said, she grabbed my hands and she said, "No matter what happens to me in this process, I know I have one person who believes in me." And after that, my focus shifted from helping me and mine to helping anyone who was under-resourced and underrepresented, to honor all the grandmothers who wanted the best for their children's children. Fast forward to UC Berkeley. I loved being at Berkeley, loved being in the room making those decisions, but I wondered how much I was being true to my original goal. And I knew about MLT's work since I'd been a representative at some of their events. And one day, I caught myself looking across the courtyard at a group of MLT coaches laughing and talking with their fellows. And I thought to myself, how do I do that?
And so just to follow that, like, how do you do that? You left us there, kind of like, what was the spark that sent you over?
Yeah, so then I decided that I would apply to be a coach at MLT. Again, I love my time at Berkeley, but I wanted to pursue my original intent, which would be to help under-resourced, underrepresented individuals get into the best business schools possible.
It's interesting thinking about parents, grandparents, and you're sharing your story has made me think about, I know we have talked about this before, my mother-in-law, who in Spain grew up in a period, Spain was very poor. And so not being able to go beyond even finish high school, right? The necessities of not having anything, the resources, having to work and help out. And she is a smart cookie and was very successful in life. Mm-hmm. But I think many of the elements that you brought up certainly resonate with many of us who have family or have been in situations like that. So as a kickoff into our conversation here, I want to just cut over to that and maybe, you know, not to spoil or boil down our show, it is about hard truths. And I would say here at the outset, you've worked with so many people, you've been on both the admission side and helping people get in, particularly those from underrepresented groups. Is there just one hard truth or message from your work, working with these top talent, that you just share at the beginning?
Yes, if I may, I have two, if that's okay.
Go for it.
Okay. The first one is that truly admissions is about 25% subjective. So we can debate about the number, but suffice it to say, institutions are crafting a class that's best suited to the institution and its desired impact on the world. They don't always admit the best and brightest. And that's a direct quote from an AO from a highly competitive institution. And when I say AO, I mean admissions officer. So regardless of your work experience, test scores, your academic history, there's a little bit of luck involved. And I like to anchor on Edna Mode quotes from the first Incredibles movie. I don't know if you remember her.
I don't.
But she said, I'll never forget it. She said, "Luck favors the prepared." So applicants have to accept that challenge that they need to act without a guaranteed expectation of results. So regardless of your profile, that's not a guarantee that you're going to get in. And that follows up my second one, hard truth. It's that admissions is not a reward for what you've done. It's a prediction of what you're going to do at the school and beyond. And sometimes applicants get caught up in the mindset that I have the best job, the best letters of recommendation, and that's enough, right? I'm going to get in. I found that that's not quite enough. I've had fellows who don't quite have a vision of what business school will do for them, and they want to be rewarded for what they've done professionally. But it's my job to get them to envision themselves 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line. What does that look like for them? What does success look like for them? I know you need to know where you've been, certainly, and where you are, but you really need to know where you're going and why you're going there. And the why is essential. I have a book to share, like oftentimes I have fellows read Start With Why by Simon Sinek. It's a really great resource to understanding what's your motivation for what you do in life.
I totally want to capture that because you could basically translate that to individuals who are trying to move up in their organizations, right?
Yes.
There is a selective part to it. Why? Why do they want to get up there, right? What is it they're trying to seek? What is it they're missing or trying to fulfill? Yeah. Thank you for sharing those two hard truths. There's many aspects that get candidates in, but to highlight perhaps three that are overlooked that you find very important. Just to set a little bit of context here, I briefly mentioned MLT, which serves underrepresented groups focusing on African American, Latinos, Native Americans in the US, and specifically into the business arena, MBA programs and their business careers. Anything that you want to just call out here in terms of context of MLT or your work that's important for our conversation?
Yeah. So MLT's mission is, as you mentioned, we're trying to advance racial equity. We want to close the racial wealth gap. There are two sides of the house with MLT. One side is the advisory services, where we work with organizations. And the other side is the side I work on, is where focusing on supporting the career trajectory of individuals from college all the way through the C-suite. And MBA prep is about in the center of that. And so we do support African-American, Latino, Native, Indigenous, and we support individuals who are dedicated to our mission as well at all the educational and career levels.
I looked at kind of people in your program, or I know David and Sasha from the podcast. I got to get, know them quite well. I think there's a tendency, right, when it's, they're helping underrepresented groups, to emphasize here that you're already dealing with kind of top sharp prospects on paper. Because if they weren't, they wouldn't even be considered or make the first cut into this high stakes selection admissions process. What are some of the reasons that this talent pool needs extra support?
Thank you for that. To underscore your first point, yeah, these are highly qualified individuals. I have individuals who are leaders at NASA, who come from the Army, the Navy, the Space Force, from private equity and venture capital, and tech giants like Google. So they absolutely have the chops to be successful. Some of the fellows are first generation or in professions where they have no connections or history, like family history in that profession. There's also a subset of fellows that come from financially or professionally privileged backgrounds, but they still face the reality of being the only one, the only person of their back room in a classroom or a meeting or a setting as they evolve along their path. And so the challenges of being underrepresented in these spaces, they might vary for individuals of color, and we don't think that they're a monolith, right? They're often quite diverse from one another, but it's helpful to have a supportive environment where individuals have a shared goal and a similar background to be supportive of each other, if I may repeat myself.
Mm. And so we go to this talent pool. You've just described some of those backgrounds, which already sounds like they're on a trajectory. Let's talk about three of the kind of key drivers to getting in that are underappreciated in your work. Where do you want to start? What would you say is one of the top ones?
Yeah, I'll share some of my secrets. So my first one is that I believe that the application is a conversation. That is, communication goes both ways between the applicant and the school. So oftentimes applicants want to cut and paste the same material into each school's essays. And while, yes, you absolutely remain the same person with the same career trajectory, the schools are looking for different candidates and they tell you who they're looking for. I like to have the applicants start with an institution's mission statement. So to understand the mission statement at the school is to understand what type of school a student they're looking for to help fulfill the mission. I also suggest applicants look at what students they highlight in their material, who they hire to represent the school at official events, what alumni do they invite to share their experiences, and all of these will give the applicants a tip to who they're looking for. And finally, and quite importantly, what questions are they asking in the essays? Are they asking about the applicant's dreams and aspirations? That might be an institution that may lean into a more transformative experience once you get into school. Are they asking what you will contribute to the school? That might be an institution that's looking to what you've done previously in an academic setting and ask themselves what you're bringing to the table that they can leverage at their institution. As a result, it's really beneficial for the applicant to understand what the school is looking for and very essential that they know how to communicate how they fit into the school's surrounding culture and ethos. So as an applicant, you're communicating your value, both what you will give and what you're going to get from the program. And that needs to be an in-depth conversation. So like with any conversation or communication, small talk is not enough. You need to have a deeper connection to truly find out what you love in a school and for the school to see you and fall in love with you as an applicant. So I like to leverage communication tools and tips. One of my favorite podcasts is Think Fast, Talk Smart by Matt Abrams. And there's another thing that I usually like to look at. It's called Zoom Like a Voice Actor by Claire Fry. And she talks about presentation and presence in interviews and how to get rid of some anxiety and stress right before you present. I also encourage applicants read not just about writing, but about presentation speeches, all sorts of communication, because sometimes you have to learn how to tell your story, and it's not always present in a natural discourse between an applicant and their usual business. So I say, learn how to communicate and communicate well, and it serves you in your essays and in your interviews.
So really know who you're talking to and what they're selecting or value.
Yes.
I just came out of the podcast with David, right? He was an Air Force pilot. So if we bring this down to the ground level, like what would be an example, like maybe from one of your clients that was applying to two of the top schools, did their applications look really different because those two schools seem to be attracting a different set of people?
Yes. So without naming names, there's one school who very much emphasizes leadership in their mission statement. And so that applicant was able to leverage the times that they were leaders in their undergraduate institution or perhaps in an employee resource group at work. The other school really wanted to understand what were their motivations for doing what they want to do. So that understanding the why, what was their impetus for wanting to go into the career goal that they wanted to go into. And in this case, it was environmental and sustainability. And so the applicant had to speak to their motivating factors, their origin story a little bit more than with the school who was emphasizing leadership.
Mm. And so that comes up in terms of your essay, maybe your interview, thinking about how you kind of present yourself or that side of yourself without changing. You're not changing who you are.
You're the same person. You have the same career goals. It's just leveraging that aspect of your brand. You mentioned brand earlier, leveraging that aspect of your brand, which will fit into the school. I never want applicants to change their career goals because they feel it might resonate with a school more than another. It's like you still want to do what you want to do. It's just about showcasing or shining a spotlight on that aspect of you that best fits with the school.
Mm. Showcasing and highlighting. A lot of people often feel I'm self-promoting, I'm boasting about myself. How do you toe that line? Because you do need to say you've done these things. I'm curious from your perspective and in helping them, what are there ways that you do that well without feeling icky?
I think, and this brings to mind something that I learned from the Matt Abrams podcast, is to speak to inform, but not to impress. So don't use a lot of adjectives to talk about impressive that you are in your bullet points for your resume or even in the essay itself. If you did these things, just speak to them very objectively, even in the interview, very objectively. And then you let the recommenders talk about how wonderful you are and what a rock star you are. And you really don't need to prove yourself to the committee if you've done some really impressive things. Just speak to inform, not to impress.
Speak to inform, not to impress. Okay.
You've been listening to 97% Effective with your host, executive coach Michael Winderoth. If this interview is making you think, make sure to share it with a friend. Now, back to our interview.
A second area that came up when we spoke, and you alluded to this before, oftentimes an individual may be the only person from their backgrounds. And you mentioned there's this huge power of a network and community. Can you share more about why that's so critical and how, you know, that helps in the process?
Yeah, I think that's another aspect that individuals who view applications as a solitary journey. So I like to say apply with the door open, not with the door closed. This year, I had three applicants who were unsuccessful in their pursuit to business school last year. Every year I have one or two. And this year, all three of them got into at least one of their dream schools. So what did they do differently? They did two things. First of all, they fully engaged with the experience beyond the website. Yes, you can learn a lot of things about a school on their website, but if you really want to have that next level of understanding of an institution, you have to attend their virtual information sessions. You have to go to in-person events, if at all possible. Sometimes there's gems that are shared there by alums or admissions officers that are not readily available. This year, I had two schools share like blueprints, basically, on how to approach their essays that I'd never seen before. And this was in a webinar. Could not find it on a website after I attended the webinar. So I think that power of networking, not just with one another or individuals who are applying as well, but networking and engaging with the institutions, with the admissions officers. It's not going to get you in. Just because an admission officer knows you by name, it's not going to get you in. It's that level of understanding, that deeper level of understanding of the school and what the school might offer. And that bleeds through in your essays and through your interviews later. You have a better understanding of the school and as a result, more confidence in your speaking about how you would fit within the school. Network to better understand. I think the benefit is because they networked and engaged a little bit more, they have a deeper understanding of the school. And secondly, they are able to take time in writing their essays and understanding what they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing, and not just about getting a good job, but truly understanding what the NBA is going to give to them. And that's the other mental model that I like to go to, which is consistency over intensity. So don't wait till the last minute to apply to business school. It's really important for you to pace yourself. Oftentimes people will ask, why do I have to engage with MLT for 9 months prior to applications? I want to apply, you know, a month prior to. I think I get my essays together. I was an English major. I don't understand what the problem is here. But consistently engaging with the schools, understanding the essays, it really, really helps. No grammatical errors in the data entry forms, a deep understanding of your bullet points in your resume and what you've done. It helps the application be that much stronger.
So you play the long game. Again, that phrase is sticking with me of consistency over intensity.
Yes.
You'd mentioned the network. When David and Sasha mentioned MLT, they did talk about their coaches. They talked about alumni from MLT, because your peers don't know what they don't know and may not be the best guy, which is why you get coaching. But they spoke very highly of people who have been through it, well beyond it, can look back and share gems. How does one leverage that network or utilize that network?
I think at MLT, we refer to individuals who have gone through our programs as rising leaders. The last time I checked, we had over 10,000 rising leaders. Now, those are through all the programs. Those aren't just those individuals who've gone through MBA prep. But for me, I've been a coach for 6 years. So I have individuals who have graduated from these institutions. If I have someone who's coming up who wants to go into private equity and maybe they're coming from HR, I can connect them with individuals that I've worked with who are currently in private equity or who have gone through those institutions, and they can help them codify their trajectory a little bit more. They can talk to them about their experiences in business school. It's just really helpful. It's a common phrase is you can't be what you can't see. It's really helpful for individuals to see people who look like them, who've gone through this process and who are very, very successful, and to talk with them about that. And for the most part, people who have gone through MLT will freely discuss their experiences with current fellows. And I always caution my fellows. In fact, we were just having a call the other day congratulating them on their success in round one. I'm going to reach out to you and I'm going to send people to you, and please engage with them. Talk with them about your experiences. It harkens back to college and fraternities and sororities. There is a power in that network with individuals who are like-minded, who can support one another, even if they may not know that person. The MLT brand really is powerful in that way.
Since we're talking on this, I'd love to ask you, because MLT has been around for quite a long time. If you were coaching a client years ago and the kind of challenges they faced or the ways they went about it, is there anything different today for this new group, either who they are, the situations they face, or strategies that work for them?
So I think in admissions themselves, there have been some challenges over the course of the last few years. In fact, our founder, John Rice, recently had an article published in Bloomberg about how that has impacted the landscape for individuals who are underrepresented and under-resourced. I would say the mindset of the coaches and myself in particular is stay the course. That things may have shifted globally and within the nation, but because we are confident the individuals that we coach are so talented and so deserving that we've pretty much stay the course. Could things change in the future? Yes. For the most part, it's stay the course. Mm.
So while barriers may arise, and frankly, we can't control that, the best foot forward we've got is this staying the course and these things you've talked about, thinking about communication, going both ways, leveraging the power of this network, also getting to know the schools. And your point, maybe you can add a little more if there's anything there to the consistency over intensity.
Yeah, I think that that's just how you approach the application in and of itself. Like, approach the application in its entirety with intentionality, from essays to data entry to short answers to interviews. They all count. I had 1 year where a number of my fellows attended an event with a speaker who said that the resume is 40% of the application. And that's the most important part. And so they really eased up on their essays and other aspects. But I think if you stay the course, and everything is not equally as important, but everything is important, that you stay consistent in your approach across the board, all the way through the interviews.
The things that you have talked about, and again, this idea of staying the course, kind of best practices, these are extremely useful and helpful. I think they are universally applicable to everyone who's thinking about getting into competitive environments, best practices, if you will. So if we talk about underrepresented groups, do you find that they have unique or different challenges?
Yes, immediately imposter syndrome comes to mind. So that feeling that you don't belong, you're not good enough for the success you've achieved, or you're some way undeserving of the success you've achieved. this conversation actually came up with my fellows the other week. I do think that there are two sides to imposter syndrome. So there's that internal feeling of inadequacy based on your humble beginnings, right? But I also think there might be external drivers of imposter syndrome. One of my fellows was told to her face that she was a diversity hire, and she had to later help her colleague who told that to her successfully complete a project. So these experiences may lead one to believe that they don't belong or aren't good enough. So it's complicated, the genesis of where that imposter syndrome comes from. In fact, there's a Harvard Business Review article on this very subject, and it's called Stop Telling Women They Have Imposter Syndrome. So stop telling women what they're feeling externally is just something that's internally driven. Very interesting article. So I would say, yes, it shows up in my fellows. They recognize it, and it shows up in different ways. Sometimes there's this disbelief that they can apply to the top business schools, that they won't get in. Oh, they'll never admit me, despite these people having really strong profile. Sometimes it shows up in the opposite manner, where there's an inability or an unwillingness to talk about failures or weaknesses because they feel like it's like a house of cards. If I admit one thing that I did wrong, then no one will admit me to their program. So I have to have this facade of perfection. So that perfectionist. So individuals who are too humble and individuals who are perfectionists. I've seen both.
How does you as a coach help them through that or recognize it, address it, overcome it? I don't know what the right words are here for it, but if it's there, how do you work with them?
Well, I think they recognize it too, right? They address the elephant in the room. Beyond listening to their experiences and validating their perspective, I think one of the most important things to do, and I referenced that earlier, is that to get them connected to people who've achieved success at these schools who have a similar background. So a glimmer of hope often arises, like they too can be in those rooms. In fact, one of my fellows the other day, he said, being in the same room with people I'm intimidated by helps me believe that I belong. So there's something that I do as a coach to support them, but also externally, again, that network, that expansion of your worldview because of the people that you meet, networking through MLT or outside of MLT, can help you believe that you belong in that room.
So a lot of times you're a connector trying to bring that group together to talk about it and share their experiences.
Yes.
Is all the coaching you do one-on-one? It sounds like maybe you even do group sessions. What kind of benefits are there from the group facilitation that you do?
Mostly it's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. I do occasional group calls, but the group is so connected without me. Like, they have fun without me. They're on WhatsApp together. They're on Slack together. I'll hear back if one person is having an especially bad day. One of their colleagues will reach out to me and say, hey, could you check in on so and such because they're having a tough time right now with their essays. So it's a really supportive network of individuals. For MLT, there are 10 coaches and many, many fellows, which is what we reference our candidates and our applicants to business school. So there's that feeling of connection with the larger group as well as the individuals that are just coached by me.
So power in numbers.
Yes.
Candace, anything here you're surprised I didn't ask or I should have asked?
No, I think everything that I wanted to say, I covered, except one thing that I want to make sure that I mention. This is another mental model that I like to have. It's like the map is not the territory. So my map, my truth about admissions and what gets people in is not the complete territory of what might have been successful of how other people navigate admissions. So what's worked for my fellows is not the whole truth. I'm happy to learn about how other people navigate the space and learn about new maps or ways of thinking that I haven't considered before. I also like to say, because I want my fellows to feel free to correct me or push back, that I'm happy to be wrong. So if anyone decides to say, hey, I really disagree with you about that, Coach Candace, I'll be like, okay, this is your application, and I'm happy to be wrong.
So, right, you're the vehicle, but at the end of the day, they're driving the car and they're making the choices. Were there any surprises for you where someone actually said, I'm not following your advice or this, and did something radically different that comes to mind?
Yes.
Can you share in a way that doesn't divulge? Because, and I bring this up because I think this is a tension I see in my work with executives, and we do the same thing of what is being promoted in your organization. What does the organization or your division or your boss value? And then you kind of have a choice. Those are things I may have to emphasize, show, or maybe I should go some other organization. There's interesting research on this. Sometimes you need to break the rules and do things that, hey, I'm going to go fly over there and, you know, have a meeting with someone or emphasize why I may not fit into that culture, but why they need me because I'm different. Long way of saying breaking rules. And that's why I'm asking this question. So if you can share a little bit that, I'm curious of what that was and what you learned from it.
Yes, I've had individuals who have approached essays completely uniquely. So instead of writing about their perspective, they might write a poem or they might write a letter to a mentor of theirs. And I've never seen that be successful before. And so I would caution them against them. But again, they needed to be true to their application and to themselves. And so I provide the feedback freely and they're able to push back. One of those essays was extremely successful. They got in across the board. One of them was not. Can I say it was because they chose that route? No, absolutely not. Again, it's a holistic process. I don't know what was successful or not successful in that application. I can guess. But yes, breaking the rules is sometimes very, very successful. It depends on your appetite for risk. So once you listen to a coach, you get feedback from some of the other individuals who are in the cohort, and you decide, look, I want to really take this risk because I'm being true to myself. I will encourage, absolutely. If you're not risk averse and you want to take this risk, you can have great success with risky breaking of the rules behavior.
Quite interesting. It's now getting me to think also too about shifts here in terms of things that help you, right? MLT, coaching. But I've got to ask, obviously, too, about artificial intelligence, right? And these tools that we now have. Okay, so we take ChatGPT or whatever your favorite application is, and they continue to bowl me over in terms of how good they are at extracting, even writing, even producing. So not that candidates are necessarily doing that to help them, but in what ways have you found artificial intelligence either helping candidates or even yourself in MLT? Are there interesting new applications that can help us, you know, get into highly competitive environments?
I want to preface it by saying the institutions vary in how much they appreciate ChatGPT and generative AI. And there are some who absolutely do not want it used within the application process. And they're quite open with that. Like within the application themselves, you have to check a little box. I did not use generative AI to compose my application. So applicants should be aware of which institutions are more flexible in the use of AI. That being said, I have had individuals practice their interviews with ChatGPT, and you can load up ChatGPT to look for, like, if you're using the STAR method or the CAR method, and to give you feedback to that effect. I've had them tell me that ChatGPT will say, well, let me stop you right there because I feel like you've gone off base. So it's been an amazing tool for individuals to use for their interview prep. Also, for essay prep, individuals may use it for grammar checking, just to polish things up. I'm a little bit old-fashioned that I don't think that you should give a bot your voice. Like, make sure that you have your stories, your career goals all set before you decide to polish it up. Like, don't just have ChatGPT generate you as an applicant because you're going to be pretty generic. And some AOs, admissions officers, can actually feel that generic aspects. ChatGPT uses some similar vocabulary and sentence structure that a real savvy AO is going to be able to pick up on. Is it going to get you in, or will they ding you because of that? I don't know. It's such a new frontier. I would just caution applicants for over-reliance on ChatGPT.
Be careful of over-relying. I'm, you know, going around and asking this question to everyone in every industry of how it's, you know, been impacting them. So let's put it on the calendar 5 years from now, or maybe we don't even need that much of how much generative AI is shaping our work, mm-hmm. our missions, or the tools that people use to achieve more of their goals. I'm super curious about it. So let's put it on the calendar.
Absolutely. I have quite a few fellows who want to go into AI. And so I know they're moral and ethical individuals. So I look forward to see what they're going to do with it.
Candace, fantastic interview. How do people reach out or see what you do? And then also, how do those who feel like they would benefit from MLT get access to it?
Thanks for asking, Michael. I think you can learn about MLT on our website, of course. Our application is open for MBA prep for those individuals who want to start thinking about working with us. And of course, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Candace Gonzalez-Toomey, MBA prep coach, senior team lead at Management Leadership for Tomorrow, MLT. Candace, thank you. And I look forward to that conversation in 3 years.
It's a date, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to 97% Effective, where we skip happy talk and help you break through and ascend one hard truth at a time. Help others discover this show. Leave a review and rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like what you heard, you can get free resources, including the first chapters of Michael's book, Get Promoted, on his website, www.changwinderoth.com. That's www.changwenderoth.com.
Are you looking for legit ways to make extra money? Our friends at The Side Hustle Show have put together this cool free 60-second quiz to help you do just that. All you got to do is go to hustle.show. You can do it right from your phone. Answer a few short multiple choice questions, and it'll recommend a few episodes of the hit Side Hustle Show podcast to start with. You can add your personalized Side Hustle Show playlist to your device, learn what works, and start making more money today. Again, that's at hustle.show, or follow the award-winning Side Hustle Show in your favorite podcast app.